Good. Anything embarrassing I said didn't get recorded. I'm really proud of that. Thanks.
Oh, no, it's all recorded.
No!
Oh, yeah. And
blackmail!
You better believe that we are going to leave everything in.
No.
So anyway, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome to our very fantastic and bubbly guest, Katie Masters.
Indeed.
Hi.
So, this is episode 6 of the Writers six. Podcast. Six.
Are you sure? Oh, we've done so many recordings the last few days, the last week. I've kind of lost track. I think we might be on 7 by now, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, 7. That's very true. You're, again, Martin is the smart one. And
Martin's a lot of things, isn't he?
Yeah, a lot of things. Let's not go down that road. But yeah, it's 7. Because we recorded some episodes in advance, or tried anyway, to kind of give us some breathing room during Nano. And yeah, the last episode that got published so far was 5, so I got confused. But then again, I got confused by daylight savings, so I'm not smart.
I You're just welcome. Talk a lot.
I'm pretty sure you wake up.
I'm confused all around, so.
Yes, absolutely.
So, anyway, my name is Greg.
So he managed to get that part right. I'm Martin, and as previously mentioned, we do have Katie Masters with us, who is far more lively than either of us.
I try.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, first of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're working on, and yeah, you just kind of your writing life kind of thing.
My writing life. Oh, wow. Well, I mean, if you wanted to go that far back, I'd have to start when I was, like, you know, able to talk. But I have...
So, carry right on.
Right? Yeah, no, I come from a very long line of storytellers, so pretty much I've been a storyteller since I was able to speak. But I'm trying to think, gosh. Things I'm working on now are really, really varied and a lot. So I'm currently working on a girl-girl geeky rom-com comic, or really it's a graphic novel, I think is what we decided it was going to be. And I'm working with an artist with that. And yeah, sorry, I hear breathing. So I feel like that meant a question was about to happen.
No, I was just saying that's pretty awesome that you're working on that.
Oh, thank you. I try, apparently. And I'm working on 2 middle grade children's books and a paranormal romance mystery currently.
Nice blend of genres.
Right? I try. I have what I'm supposed to be writing a second book for my sci-fi story that is getting, it's out next year actually, and they haven't asked for the second book yet, so I'm just, hopefully they're not listening to this. But I'm supposed to start on that soon, I'm sure. Haven't.
So you mentioned you've got a book that's going to be coming out next year. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, it's a modern day science fiction thriller alien takeover. So sci-fi. It's called Beacons, and it comes out next spring at some point.
That sounds pretty awesome. Is it available to pre-order yet, or are we going to have to...
I don't think it's... I think you'll have to wait for it. It's not available for pre-order yet. I think that's closer to the date, probably more in the January, February area, I'm assuming. I have no idea. My publishing house will tell me. I know nothing. I know nothing about my own book. It's fine. but it's but it's about the book itself is about three main characters from around the world, different ages, different genders, who find that they are the only three that are not falling to an insidious alien invasion, and everyone else on the planet is kind of going to sleep except them, and they don't know why, and they find they might have a chance to figure it out and possibly save Earth.
Sounds cool. Sci-fi is always good.
Right?
I assuming that you're a full-time writer.
I am not, because I'm new to trying to get my writing career going. Right? It takes a lot. It's a long time. It's definitely not been an easy or, like, fast journey. So writing mostly isn't.
So what I'm kind of admiring here is that you have time for all these projects, then I'm assuming a job, and being awesome on Twitter. How exactly is that? Like, is there some kind of dimensional device that you use to have 36 hours in a day or something?
Well, time travel.
It's called procrastination, and no,
I'm very familiar with that.
Right, it's great. So I'm usually on Twitter when I probably should be writing, and then I'm writing when I should be on Twitter, and then I work part time so that I have time to write and be on Twitter as much as I am. So
fantastic. Speaking of your Twitter presence, I did want to bring up something, actually. You are the self-proclaimed writer's big sister. I'm really interested as to how that came about and why you wanted to have that stance where you're immensely supportive of all the writers that you encounter. And you're always sending out tweets about it just kind of morale boosting, really. So how did that get started?
That actually, okay, so it's kind of a two-parter. Most of the time, I say really supportive, positive things because they're things I wish I was being told or that I tell myself. And so I figured if I'm feeling this way and I'm telling myself this, like, there must be 50 million people feeling the same way probably, so I should support them too, because I know how it feels because I'm trying to support myself. So that's how that started. As for being a big sister, I'm actually a big sister of four kids, and I'm the oldest. And I just kind of felt that everyone needed one, because on Twitter, at least on the writing community in Twitter, regardless of age, there tends to be a lot of people who are really down on themselves. And kind of put their work down and themselves down. And as a big sister and growing up being a big sister, I have my siblings do that. So I'm constantly hitting them and saying, stop doing that. You're wonderful. And so doing what all my siblings do, I'll just go and hit them and say, stop it. You're wonderful. So
yeah, I've only ever been the little brother. So it's nice having someone with that kind of outlook, and I have noticed so many times there's been times when you've put out your really supportive posts and so many people are just going, I really needed to hear this today. And I just think it's a wonderful thing, and the kind of posts you put out are just simply fantastic. They really are.
Oh, I try. Yeah, no, honestly, probably 7 out of 10 times when I put those up, it's because I'm feeling down myself. So I try to cheer other people up because I'm feeling bad. But that's why I do it, because if you're going to feel bad, I just try, you know, you got to stay positive, or at least try. So it makes me happy to make other people happy at the end of the day. So if my being sad helps make them better, like, cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, I can't remember where I read this, but there's the saying, it goes like, a shared sorrow is half sorrow.
Oh, that's a good saying. I've heard that one, yeah. Totally true. Unless you're like super miserable, and then maybe not so true.
Yeah, but you know, the majority of the time when we think that we are the only ones who feel that way, like connecting with others and learning that they go through the same thing helps.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like that's kind of a thing. I think especially for writers, we're so much in our own heads, like every day we're in our own heads. And it's really easy to fall in that trap of being down on yourself and telling yourself you're not good enough or, you know, those kinds of things. It's really easy to do that. And so we end up being really lonely and not saying that we're lonely or saying that we're scared or depressed or angry or disheartened. And so I try to be more upfront about it. Like if you are depressed or sad or, you know, speak about it, because there are other people who are feeling what you're feeling too. You're not alone, and writers often feel that they are. And I think that's why my posts tend to resonate so well with people, is because that, like, they were feeling that way that day, and I was too. And what do you know? So it was, you know, 900 other people, and they needed to hear it. So
awesome!
It really is. I was also interested when listening to you, the list, the kind of projects that you've got. You've got quite a broad range of things, not just in terms of genre, but also audiences that you're writing for. How do you find differentiating between the kind of audiences that you've got? Because you said you've got sort of middle grade children, you've got normal sort of adult and young adult kind of things. So how do you find switching between those kind of styles of writing?
I'm not hard. Generally for me, the characters kind of just show up with a story in my head and go, here you go. And so that I have found it to be fairly easy, only because I feel like it's not me writing, it's whatever characters decided to come out. And I just kind of let them go. I will say probably middle grade has been the trickiest, only because I'm constantly worried that a word is too large or I'm using too complex of a word. But in my daily life, I'm a nanny and I work with children with special needs all the time. And so I am really used to working with kids and knowing how they talk and how they interact, even not just with special needs, just every day. And so for me, middle grade, I have to perpetually, is this word okay? I'm actually okay with knowing that I can explain things for kids, because I have to do that every single day. But making sure I'm the word that they'll get is good. And there's actually a fine balance in middle grade, because you have to find words that are going to make them question what it is. Like, they might get the gist of what it is, but they'll want to know how to say the word or look it up because it sounds interesting to them, but you that they just give up. And so finding that balance can be really hard.
Awesome. For me, so that just makes you sound, you know, more awesome.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. I feel like I'm like super nerdy half the time, but thank you. I'll take awesome.
Well, as we've probably established on numerous occasions, nerds are like awesome. So
I know there were those movies, right?
Yeah, we are taking over the world finally.
Damn straight. Took long enough.
It's right. Our time now.
It's been our time for like 10 years. We're kind of slaying. So.
So
you look at the Marvel franchise.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's skyrocketed at long last. DC, not so much, but yeah, we don't talk about that.
Well, DC is...
Oh no, why not?
DC is on the rise in TV, so... I think...
Yeah, I like DC a little bit more than Marvel, if that makes me lose followers.
Well, we'll see how you go.
DC is fine. It's just their movie division is that the incompetent ones.
Their storytelling is good though.
Yeah,
and they're actually much more diverse than Marvel is. Marvel, I feel sometimes, does diversity for the sake of being diverse, not for the actual story, the actual characters. And DC is well known for having different comics and comics that represent underrepresented people, like people who are gay. So they have comic divisions for specifically that. I don't know that Marvel does.
Well, Greg's the Marvel expert among us, so you know better than us.
I'm not sure I agree with you on that, but I will say
look,
that
I've said it, so it must be true. All right.
Not you with Katie about the diversity part, but then again, I have to admit I haven't really looked at them this way, but I do think that, for example, Batman is probably a better character than any other in the DC or in the Marvel.
Oh, sure. No, I love that. That's actually one of my favorite storylines and like worlds. I really love Batman. That's a great story.
And it's a shame that they can't make a proper movie about him.
Really? I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, the first two, the Michael Keaton ones were pretty decent. And then you had The Dark Knight, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah, but they are kind of at the two ends of the spectrum. Like I grew up with the 89 Batman. That's my Batman. Even I can admit that it was campy as hell, and like it's a Tim Burton movie, so it's not really a Batman movie. It's a Tim Burton Batman movie, so that's a different thing.
If you want to talk campy, we could always go to Batman Forever. That's campy.
Yeah, like okay, yeah, that's really over the top.
I'll say for Tim Burton, he made that film. He did some really good stuff with it. Like, I don't know if you've noticed, but throughout the whole movie, it's constantly gray. It's never just sunny and happy. It was a really good atmospheric thing I felt they did for the for the show.
Which one are we talking about now? Which one are we talking about now? You, as far as I'm concerned, anyway, you kind of keep fading in and out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't. Hopefully, my connection isn't awful. It might be. I don't know. The Tim Burton Batman movies. I thought those were well done.
Yeah, I did. And of course, it's got the best ever Catwoman.
Yes, it does.
Well, the only Catwoman that's. Yeah.
Well. Yeah.
But and I will say this, and this will lose me followers, I think the best Batman as an actor is actually Ben Affleck.
Okay.
Really?
I can't really comment. I haven't seen the newer ones, but
unpopular
he doesn't
opinion.
Look too bad from what I've seen, but I can't really comment.
That 15-second scene in Batman v Superman, the warehouse scene, that just blew my mind. That was quintessential Batman. That's what I want from a Batman movie, because that's Batman. But yeah, I can't remember where I heard this, but it was a great thought that the reason why DC struggles with their movies and why Marvel is so successful with theirs is that, and this is actually a good lesson for storytellers, is that DC characters are not very cinematic. Like Batman is a dark, it's a brooding character, and the stories that come with it. You know, 60 the Adam West TV show notwithstanding. So it doesn't lend itself as much to cinema as the Marvel characters who are kind of bubbly and bright and colorful are. And it doesn't make it any, you know, any better or worse. It's a good idea to take a look at the character, and because character can influence the medium. Mm-hmm. And what works as a character in comics or whatever, it may not work as a film. So back to you, Katie. Can you tell us a little about your writing process? How do you work? How do you, like you mentioned a little bit that you kind of have characters fully formed come to you and you write those stories down. But is there any particular process? Do you outline? Do you kind of discovery write?
That's a good question. I have a weird writing. I would usually, when the story comes, I'll have like a beginning, a middle, an end, and then whatever happens in between, that's what happens. And my writing process for each story is very different, I guess. I wrote my YA Brennan, that one in a month and a half, because I was focused and I wrote every single day. And actually, like, the last stretch of it was just kind of I had to push myself, but I did it, and it was a month and a half it took. And then the second, the one that I wrote, the one that's getting picked up, Beacons, that one I wrote in a month. I wrote it in 4 weeks, except for the last 20 pages, which took almost a year, where I didn't write that story for like a year, because I couldn't get my characters to do what I wanted, and the ending wouldn't work well, and it was extremely frustrating. And for me, I tend to hear my characters' voices. I, Katie, don't have to say or do anything. It's usually my characters writing, not me, is how I see it. And so they just went silent. I had no characters in my head whatsoever for that story for like a year, and it was almost a year to the day. It was really, really frustrating. And it was because I was trying to make my characters do something they didn't want to do and act in ways that they didn't want to act. And I was trying to force it just so I could end the story. And because I was trying to force it, they went, nah, then never mind, you're not writing it. So I spent a year just being like, okay, I'll write something else then, I guess. And then finally I realized that was why I had that problem, and I wrote 20 pages in a day and it was done. So
I can certainly relate to the whole having issues with writing for long periods of time. As I may have briefly mentioned to you on Twitter, I've very recently got back into the swing of writing after a really long time of not being able to focus and get on with things. And the amount of work I've put out in the last few days alone, last night I did 2,029 words, and it was just so liberating.
Nice to done.
Good job.
It's just when you're writing a story, and for once I'm writing a story where I've actually got plot points laid out, and I know what's happening in some major places. Yeah. So every time I hit one of those major plot points, I can just power through it, and it's just amazing. But the problem I was getting was getting to those places, and I was getting distracted by a lot of things. It was just immensely frustrating. Yeah, I associate with a lot of the things that you were saying.
Oh, alone, yay! Yeah, no, I've actually... this whole year has been frustrating as a writer for me, just because I'll get like a burst of inspiration, and then by the time I get home to write it, I'm not inspired anymore. Or I just go long stretches, like I'll write something for a week and then I go long stretches, like a month or two, where I'm not inspired, I can't bring myself to write. And I learned, not everyone agrees with me, and that's totally fine because everyone's different. I found that I can't write and just push through it when I'm in those moods, because I'll try and I hate everything I write. I'll come back to it the next day to see, well, maybe I was just in a mood and maybe it's better than I thought it was. And I read it and no, it's like worse than I thought it was the day before. And then it makes me believe, oh, I really am a bad writer. Never mind, I shouldn't write anymore. So I've learned to not, for me personally, push myself when I'm in a bad writing mood to just write, because it never works, ever.
No, absolutely. I really don't, I do not relate to the kind of people that say when you're feeling writer's block, just power through it. It's like, but I can't.
Right? Right? It's the worst. And props to the people who can do that, because I can't.
I also don't trust people that say writer's block doesn't exist. Like, really? It blatantly does.
Right? And I think it's because everyone has different terms for what writer's block is or isn't. Like, you know, and so I see writer's block as something you have where your passion for like writing or story is gone. You don't have any. You have no no imagination coming in, no drive, no need, and everything you try and write is, including like for the story you're working on, it just suddenly isn't there anymore. And that to me is a writer's block. For me personally, but some people might just see a scene as a writer's block if they can't get one scene. For me, it's a complete void of any imagination whatsoever. So, and I had like 3 months of that at the beginning of the year where I felt no need or drive to write or anything. Like January through March, it was awful. Like I generally sat at my computer going like, is this the end? Am I like no longer a writer? I just don't write anymore.
Oh yeah, I have felt that so much as well. Exactly the same sort of feeling. It was just when you feel like you can't get any writing done, and you just start questioning, well, was that it? Was that all I had in me? Was just, I mean, in my case, it was just 2 books. It's like, is that all that I'm going to be able to do in the entire course of my life?
Right? Worst feeling.
It really is. It's so and it, which I think is yeah, sorry, Greg.
I was just saying that it goes to show that first, nobody knows anything in this business, and because it's really like one person's writer's block is another's, I don't know, whatever it is. And it's but that's actually a source, it can be a source of inspiration or source of motivation for anyone who is trying to start writing, is that there's no one way, there's no set path. So just figure it out for yourself and go for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, writing is, everyone's journey is going to be different. There are things that are similar and things everyone can relate to, but it's still, you know, slightly to the left. Everyone's journey is still slightly different. And there's definitely no right or wrong way to do something. And especially writing. And that's like the worst when people ask me for writing advice, because I'm sitting there going like, I don't know what I'm doing. Don't ask me. I'm going to leave you astray.
Which is exactly why one of my favorite bits of advice that I've ever come across is ignore the advice. It sounds counterintuitive, right? But the person who mentioned it went on to say that, you know, all these different authors are going to have different ideas about what constitutes the right way to write, when really you just have to find your own way of doing it. If you know, just doing one word a day is right for you, if just doing one page a week is right for you, then that's right for you. Just find your way and stick with that.
Yeah, everyone, exactly. And I especially feel for the people who are first starting out writing, or even just, you know, are maybe a year into it, and they're looking at everyone else around them and being like, well, they're writing 500 words or 10,000 words or 5,000 words. But like everyone's pace is different. And even V.E. Schwab, right? Like the author of A Darker Shade of Magic, like she's actively put on Twitter, like something like 2 weeks ago, she was looking at everyone's word count at 5,000 and she's staring and she's got two. So I mean, and she's, you know, she's famous. Like, that's, everyone is different, and no one writes 24/7. Okay, not everyone writes 24/7. There are authors who write, they have a routine, and they write Monday through Friday. They treat it like a job, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, they're writing. And I cannot do that. I do not have that stamina.
Well,
I can spend 3 hours writing and get 10,000 words on a good day. And when I was really pushing myself at the end of one of my books, I wrote something like 60 pages in like 8 hours because I was like, I have to get it done. And I wrote like, I don't even know how many thousands of words, but it was a lot. So, but everyone's different.
Yeah, again, went through the same kind of process during when I was writing my first book. It was just one particular night where just all the ideas were just pouring out, and it was just like, I was just sat at the keyboard, my fingers were practically bleeding. I was like, no, I've got to keep writing. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I've got to keep writing. Yeah, I ended up going to bed at 5 in the morning.
That is my favorite zone, though, where you're not even thinking, you're just writing and the story's going. That's my favorite, because that's when you get the most words out. And that's actually like the most important part. Like, if you, regardless of who you are, you know, when you hit a zone, like no matter what time of day it is, just keep going, because you'll lose it the second you stop. I know it sounds awful, but it's true, though. The second you stop, like, it's done.
Yep.
Like, that's it.
It really is.
Just keep going, even if it's 5 in the morning, just keep going. So
you can sleep later, you can sleep when it's on the page, but just keep going.
Yep, exactly. I did that once where I said, well, I'll take a break, it's fine, because I still got the flow and I'm really feeling great and this is good. And I like went to go, like, honest to God, I like went to go get tea. I came back and I was like, oh, it's gone. I don't want to do it anymore.
I'll just stand up, like, to stretch my legs. I'll just, you know, grab a quick drink, and I can't think.
How do words work?
There it goes. Yeah.
Huh? How do words work again?
I can't remember. But yeah, I've definitely had days where I only wrote 100 words, if that, and then deleted them the next day. So. I mean, everyone's different, and you should never compare your word count to someone else's word count. And what was it? A friend of mine who's also a writer said, don't compare your beginning to someone's middle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very good advice.
Yeah. And I thought that was indeed the greatest thing I've ever heard. So I constantly remember that whenever I get sad. I'm just like, but I'm where I'm at, and where I'm at is not where they're at. And my beginning, okay, but best piece of advice I ever got whenever I find myself comparing.
About writing advice, and this metaphor keeps coming back to me. First I read it in Stephen King's book on writing. He basically described writing advice as a toolbox. Is that not mm-hmm. every tool will work for you, because not every tool is the right tool for the job. And then last week I read Chuck Wendig's 1001 Ways to Be a Better Writer, and he opens with the exact same metaphor, is that take what works, like read the advice, take the advice, take or keep what works for you and discard what doesn't. I think that's a good way of doing it. You know, if it works, don't fiddle with it. If it doesn't, keep improving and keep trying new things. But other than that, there's no reason to compare yourself to others, especially. And I want to add that is that don't compare yourself to others because you don't know what others are doing. So maybe someone is a best-selling author and they are doing book tours and they are funny and make it seem easy, but they go home and they are a nervous mess.
I think every writer goes home and is a nervous mess.
True enough, yeah. It comes right with the territory.
Yeah, no, that's, take the advice. I don't think you should ignore advice, but take advice that works for you and resonates with you, because what resonates for you doesn't resonate for someone else. But it's good to listen to advice because you never know what will work for you.
Exactly.
So don't ignore it and throw it away, but you know, also you don't have to listen and follow every single piece of advice. If you did, you'd go insane.
I think that's a much more appropriate refinement of the one that I'd read.
Right. I don't know what you read, but I'm just going to agree with you because that seems like the right thing to do.
The
right
one that I mentioned earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, Casey, try and keep up.
I'm trying. I'm only on one mug soup bowl of tea, okay? Like, I need a second one.
Ah, fun times.
I'm still trying to. So you have this hashtag writer's table. Is that something that you invented, or is it something that you kind of took over? Because I was looking at Twitter, and you are driving that hashtag.
Yeah, I made that hashtag.
Nice.
I try. That one was that I came out of a necessity that I saw. I was on Twitter and I had a lot of people telling me that, you know, kind of what you guys were saying earlier. I get a lot of messages telling me, oh, you know, I thought I was the only one that felt this way, or, oh, wow, you make me feel like I belong. But what I mostly got was people saying, I'm new to Twitter. I have no idea how to use this. How do you even find people? How do you know? How do you find writers? How do you find readers? And I just sat there going, like, how do you not know? And then I remembered, no, I felt exactly the same way like a year and a half ago when I, you know, 2 years ago when I joined. I had no idea where to look and no idea how to find a writing community. And so I was getting all these new people going, we don't know how to do that. And I went, all right, I'm going to make a thing for all new writers. And it wasn't just new writers. I don't mean writers that are like, I'm a brand new writer and I'm writing my first book. I mean like new to Twitter, or even just, you know, first time writers, whatever. But I used the hashtag, and because I saw that a lot of people didn't know how to find people or felt that they couldn't talk to other writers because, oh, I feel like that writer is so famous or so popular, they wouldn't want to talk to me. I don't know how to do that, or even how do you start a conversation with someone who's a writer on Twitter. And so I created the hashtag so that anyone who uses that hashtag, you are free to talk to them. They want to talk to you. They want to listen to you. They want a friendship and to help each other. And so that hashtag was created, at least for me when I created it, that was my intention, was to make it so that if you're new or you're a lurker and you've never talked to anyone before because you don't know how, this hashtag, everyone wants to talk to you. You don't have to fear that they don't want to.
It's basically to promote inclusivity then.
Yes.
And that is never
and to be
a bad
nice
goal.
To people.
It's never a bad goal.
Right.
Yeah, it's an invitation.
I mean, I don't do that. Yeah.
And because we... And this topic comes up again and again in our recent episodes, is how important it is for writers to network and make connections, and not just for the value of practicality, because this is a business that where it matters extremely who you know, but also, like we discussed just now, is the support and the knowledge that others are going through similar things that you are. So what kind of advice can you give for writers where, besides obviously follow, save the search for Writer's Table, because it's awesome. But what kind of behavior or what kind of tips you can give for people looking to make new friends?
I would say, judging from what people ask me, my number one advice is just talk to them. You know, most of the time people never hit send. And don't be afraid of people. People are on Twitter because it's a social media. It's a social medium. They're there to be social. So you're there to find your tribe and your group, but you can't do that if you never talk to anyone. And most people want to talk. They want to be heard and they want to make friends and they want that group. But if you never talk to each other, you're never going to find it. And it seems really scary. I have a lot of introverted friends and friends with anxiety disorders, and it's extremely hard for people, I know, to, especially in person, go up and say hi to someone. That's very nerve-wracking. Online, I feel, is a little bit safer because you're behind a screen, and so you don't have to physically go up to someone, but say hi, comment on something. I think if it's, you know, saying hi obviously doesn't start a conversation. So my advice that I usually help my friends with is find something that they're saying or talking about and comment on it. That's how you start a conversation. And so on Twitter, you know, people want to be, they like interacting. I've said this before on Twitter, but if you imagine it as you, do you want people to talk to you? How do you feel when someone comments on your stuff or likes something? It makes you feel really good. So what do you think that makes other people feel like when you do that for them?
Yeah.
Like,
New users would also be surprised by how often you'll make a comment on one person's post, but then you'll actually get replies from other people who follow that person.
Yeah.
That's how I ended up following a lot of people when I first joined, because I would comment on stuff that I was interested in, and then other people that were also interested in the same thing and followed the same people would respond to me. And
so yeah, that's how I found a lot of friends too. Yeah. I mean, that's how I found friends on Twitter, was people responding to me, responding to someone else. And then we'd like go off on these funny tangents, and then we're like, we can't be friends. Why are we on this thread? And we like, we're friends. So,
it's the best way forward.
Yeah, no, it is. So I would say, you know, don't be nervous. Don't be scared. You're not insulting anyone or annoying anyone or bothering anyone when you're responding to something they put out. And I think that is some people's concern, you know, is that they're, oh, well, would I be annoying them? Especially for famous authors. They don't want to talk to them sometimes or comment because they're like, oh, no, I would just be annoying them. But they're on social media for a reason, you know, and sometimes they don't get to be with people because they're stuck in their home. They want to talk to people, or maybe they have anxiety. And so for them, Twitter is much safer and easier and less stressful for them to get to know people on than face to face. So I know I've talked to famous authors and other famous people that I was sure would not, you know, even notice that I said anything, but they do. And they absolutely scrolled through their stuff and comment on it. And so I've made a couple friends that way. And you just have to go out there and talk. They're human, they're people, just like you.
Yep, absolutely. So. Very, very sound advice.
So, I mean, yeah, I don't know, but I'm a huge anime nerd, and I cosplayed, and I've done that all throughout high school and college. So, I've definitely had my chance to learn how to be that way and to just go up and talk to people and meet people who were famous, but were genuinely down to earth and funny and nice and just wanted to be treated like a person, because they're often not. So I think Twitter is kind of a safe place to go do that a little bit.
And it's so nice to hear a positive opinion on Twitter, because the perception became that Twitter is an awful place, and it can be, but but it can be an incredibly supportive and positive environment. You just need to start like with a positive attitude, find the people who are worth talking to, and not be a cynic. Please don't be a cynic.
Certainly what people refer to as Twitter is a really, really lovely community to be part of, I think.
Indeed.
Which, the writers community?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh yeah, no, everyone there is super, super supportive and nice, 9 out of 10 times. I really like it. I tend to only look for the positive things in general, only because, like, I don't know the rest of Twitter because I just stay on the right, like, the writer's Twitter and the bookworm Twitter and call it a day. I don't go to other Twitter. It's like super, I'm good with not being there.
Yeah, and Twitter is built for discussion. It's the heart of it is the reply and the kind of amplifying these positive voices like yours. It's so good that more and more people learn how to do that and not just kind of use it as a soapbox to promo their whatever they are promoting.
Yeah, definitely. I feel that the world is already filled with a lot of negativity, and if you can be positive even about just one thing, like maybe be positive about that. So I think, but yeah, that's why I created the writer's table. Was I wanted it to be a safe, positive place for people, not a place where people were going to bash on you or be rude to you, or, you know. So the community I've gathered, my friends, these really amazing people, I've watched friendships grow because I read all the threads. I don't always get to respond to everything because my inbox goes insane. Like, I have a lot, but I read everything. I try to respond everything that I can, and if I can't, I try to like it. But I've seen so many friendships form because I follow the threads. I've seen people become better readers and then friends for each other and support groups for each other, and that's why I made it. Like, every time I see something like that happen, I'm like, yes, my hashtag worked, I did it, my life is complete. So so it's a positive place because there's a lot of places I feel that can be negative where you can go that route, and I didn't want that. I wanted a place where people could safely talk to people and know that they're there to support you and be your friend, not, you know, put you down.
Well,
or tell you something's impossible.
It certainly seems to work from where I'm sitting. Standing?
Yeah.
Sitting. From my point of view.
Yeah.
Reach the point in the broadcast when Martin doesn't know if he's sitting or standing.
I don't know, Martin, are you sitting or standing?
At this precise moment in time, I'm sitting, but it could change at any minute. Does Greg know what's going on these days? Probably not, but just putting it out there.
Greg knows a lot about what's going on these days. He doesn't do maths well.
You didn't seem to know, when we were getting things sorted for this recording session, because you can't figure out daytime savings, apparently.
I can figure out daytime savings. I, like, we had it when it was affecting me. I knew I had to adjust my clocks. I'm not necessarily up to speed where everyone when everyone else
is. You know what this is? This is America's fault for doing it a week later than everybody else.
I know.
Yeah, fancy Americans.
We like to be special. You know. It's about the equator. What are you talking about? We're just, you know, on different lines. It's fine. That's all.
That's just an excuse, and you know it.
And by the way, in Arizona, they don't adjust their clocks.
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah.
Because it's not an agricultural state. We did it for agriculture, because the farmers wanted. Yeah. Surprise! Bet you didn't know that. It was done for agricultural purposes. But Arizona is not an agricultural state that I'm aware of. So, like, you know, a big, huge, game-changing agricultural state. So they don't prescribe.
I'm trying to work out if that's just, if that's Arizona being more or less awkward.
Black Arizona being a desert, so hey, can't really grow things in deserts, at least not well. Yeah. So
they don't do it in Iceland, and they don't grow much either. So I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Yeah, yeah. California has it because we produce a lot of food for the world.
I thought California was just famous for oranges. No, that's
no,
Florida.
We're famous for Hollywood.
No, Florida, sorry.
No, Orange County is California. Florida.
Orange County is California, and it was called Orange County because it was nothing but orange groves at the time.
Yeah. I don't bloody know.
If it's, well, God, if you know, it's not if you this side of the Atlantic, I don't know it, all right?
Cross that little puddle.
Anyway, that's we're rapidly approaching the 1 hour mark. So.
Oh, we are. Yes, you're right.
It doesn't actually feel like it for a change.
Yeah, time flies. What do you mean? Hold that thought. Are you saying that time crawls when you are forced to talk to me and not someone delightful like Katie?
I'm not saying anything. I didn't say anything then, and I'm not saying anything now.
Are you pleading the fifth? That's so cute.
I'm kind of saddened that nobody actually got the quote that I just made, but there you go. If anybody who's listening...
I'm sorry.
Huh?
I said I'm sorry.
It's fine. Yeah, it's fine.
Going on like right now.
If any of our listeners did get the quote and the reference that I just made, then by all means drop us a line and you know, congratulate me for dropping it in there, because I was really proud of it.
Yeah, he needs the encouragement, guys. You should definitely...
Being smart is a lonely thing, so
you know. yeah. And when we don't have guests on, I'm also the pretty one.
Okay. That was a cheap shot.
Greg, you're forgetting. I've seen you without your beard. It's not a pretty sight.
Well, it's no shave November, so I
that
I
face
to
will haunt me for the rest of my life.
Oh, poor you.
And here I thought I was doing something good for, you know, male health awareness or whatever, but.
That sounds like
oh man,
that's
that, do they still do that? The beer, like the beard?
Yeah, they do. Oh, they do Movember, which is the mustache, and No Shave November, which is the beard.
Okay, I'm gonna have to watch all my friends and be like, "Are you guys doing that this year?" We're 4 days in. Come on, guys.
So anyway,
yes,
I think we've reached peak insanity for the night. So perhaps we should kind of wrap it up.
Well, it's night for us. It's very well peak afternoon insanity for Katie.
Yeah, it is just almost 3 o'clock. I still have a ways to go, and thanks to insomnia, I have really long ways to go. So it'll be fine. But that's, by the way, I just want to point out that's the greatest compliment I got about on Twitter was I was tagged in the thread, but I wasn't actively, like, you know, spoken to. And someone asked, "Does Katie ever actually sleep?" And someone went, "No, I'm pretty sure she's a vampire." And it was the best compliment ever because I have insomnia, the way it works out is I stay up really late. So everyone in Europe is waking up and sees my tweets at like 2 a.m, but then I'll go to bed for like 5 hours. And when I wake up again, it's, you know, 10 a.m. And so everyone in America is still awake. It's evening in England, so they're still seeing my tweets. Like, I've been up.
Fantastic. So, yes, let's wrap this up now then, shall we?
Go for it.
Absolutely, because I'm a lot longer than you.
So yeah, let's give Katie a chance to actually try and have a slightly more productive day than sitting around babbling to us. So yes, this has been our very wonderful guest, Casey Masters. You will be able to find everybody's links to all our Twitter pages in the show notes. So that will be Greg's individual page, my individual page, Katie's page, and by all means get on there and follow the Writers Table hashtag, because you will find lots and lots of extra wonderful people through that. There is also...
Yep, and I'll talk to you.
Sorry?
And I'll talk to you.
Yes, even better. There is also the at Writerings page itself. By all means, drop us a line, get in touch with us through there. Let us know if you want to be a guest on the show, if you've got any ideas what we can talk about next time, if there's anything you want to hear us talk about, or if you just want to say how we're doing. By all means, we'd love to hear it. We love feedback. You can drop us a voice message on Anchor. Get on there, let us know. You can also rate the podcast on iTunes and various other places that Greg will probably fill in for me, because I don't know where they are.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you know, leave a review or share us with your friends, share us with your enemies. Share us
just
with
share
everybody.
It.
Yeah, share us.
We love to hear it all. And of course, we do have email as well. So that is writerings.podcast@gmail.com. Drop us a line.
Yeah, we love email.
Yes, we do. I think I've covered everything.
Oh, you did.
Fantastic.
Yeah, you did good.
Good job.
I don't care.
He writes, he talks, he does everything.
He can say words. Yeah. He puts them mostly in order. It's great.
Thank you. I'm here all week. Try the veal.
And see if your waitresses.
That too. So, yeah, for another week, I have been Martin.
And I have been Greg.
I've been Katie.
Thank you so much.
Hopefully we'll still be.
Yeah.
I know. I'm hoping that too. I'm really hoping for that.
And thank you so much for coming on and spreading positivity. We needed that. Needed it. I think our listeners will particularly enjoy it.
And, absolutely.
Yeah. Go on Twitter and say hi to Katie.
Please do.
Hi, Katie.
And of course, as always, thank everybody who's dropped in to listen to us. We really appreciate you being here.
Indeed. Thank you very much, and we will talk to you next week.
Yes, thank you very much, and good night.
Cheers.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Night, guys.